This is Jordan Seculo. Today on Jay Seculo Live, the ACLJ's analysis in a fast-acting post-election season.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Seculo Live.
My agenda will be based on a simple core principle, putting America first. Whether it's producing steel, building cars, or curing disease, I want the next generation of production and innovation to happen right here on our great homeland, America, creating wealth and jobs for American workers. As part of this plan, I've asked my transition team to develop a list of executive actions we can take on day one to restore our laws and bring back our jobs. It's about time.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
On regulation, I will formulate a rule which says that for every one new regulation, two old regulations must be eliminated. So important. On immigration, I will direct the Department of Labor to investigate all abuses of visa programs that undercut the American worker. These are just a few of the steps we will take to reform Washington and rebuild our middle class. I will provide more updates in the coming days as we work together to make America great again for everyone, and I mean everyone.
And now, your host, Jordan Seculo.
Hey, welcome to Jay Seculo Live. This is Jordan Seculo. We have a special broadcast we put together for you today. I know many people are on the road. They're preparing for the holidays. And there's been so much that's happened in the last couple of weeks since the presidential election that you may have missed it. I mean, as you're getting ready for holidays and putting it all together, whether it's cabinet appointments or policies that are being announced and discussions and the controversies, and also not just looking forward towards the Trump administration, but also remembering that we still have a President Obama and his administration, which is in power until January 20th, that could be making very dangerous moves when it comes to the nation of Israel. So we're going to kind of put together a special show for you today for maybe as you're traveling, as you're maybe a little bit distracted, if you are joining us on the Facebook and Periscope broadcast, just to kind of overview, because I know everybody cannot join every single day on the broadcast. We have so much great content and information. So with so much to talk about, we put together this special show for you today to look back at, you know, the post-election policy issues, what the Obama administration could be up to. And Than, that's an issue we've been really concerned about when it comes to Israel.
Yeah, honestly, Jordan, that's been our primary focus over the last couple of weeks and will continue to be through the remainder of the year. Because, listen, there's a lot that the president could do here domestically, but a lot of that could be reversed by the next Congress and by the new president-elect. But Jordan, internationally, especially at the United Nations Security Council, if the outgoing president makes a significant move and abandons Israel, essentially, on a resolution that would force a resolution upon them, that would be something very difficult to undo. So that is something we're monitoring over the holidays. And in fact, we've sent letters out to every member of the Security Council with a specific focus on the permanent five. Because, Jordan, if President Obama walks away from Israel, we are going to need someone to stand in the gap for them. That's going to be something we're going to continue to focus on over this holiday break.
All right, folks, this is, again, it's a show we've put together for you because we believe there's been so much happening since the election. We had some great post-election analysis as well from some voices that are not often on the broadcast. We brought in some ministers as well, talking about healing, talking about issues, the policy issues that are facing our country right now that are very real, that I think that go past just political divides that the president-elect and his team have to address. And we're starting to get more of that policy as well through what President-elect Trump has announced in his first 100 days. So let me just say, for all of those of you who are maybe on the road right now, we pray for your safety, for your family. If you've got family coming to you, and safety in your travels and their travels, and we hope you have a very happy Thanksgiving. But we did want to keep you informed today. So whether you're in the road or at home listening to this broadcast, we're going to cover a lot, and we'd appreciate your support at the American Center for Law and Justice. That's ACLJ.org. We have a matching challenge. If you're able to make a financial contribution, anything you donate will be doubled at ACLJ.org. We appreciate your support. It's a great show coming up for you we put together. Have a happy Thanksgiving. We'll be right back.
The American Center for Law and Justice is on the front lines defending your religious and constitutional freedoms. We engage the issues that matter most, whether it's fighting to protect Christians around the globe who are targeted simply because of their religious beliefs, or working to root out the corruption inside the Obama administration and hold those who are responsible accountable. The work of the ACLJ is vital, and we could not do it without your generous support. Now you can play a key role in supporting the work of the ACLJ. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ Matching Challenge. If you make a gift now, it will be doubled. $25 becomes $50. A $100 gift becomes $200. Please stand with the ACLJ right now. Call 1-877-989-2255 or go online at aclj.org. Thank you for your support. It's a fact. Radical jihadists have one goal: complete and utter global domination. Hundreds of lives have been lost in devastating jihadist attacks from Paris to San Bernardino, Brussels to Orlando. Islamic terrorist attacks are increasingly occurring at an alarming rate. In his number one New York Times bestselling book, Rise of ISIS, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow pulled back the curtain on a new unholy alliance of Iranians, Russians, and jihadists waging war against the United States and our very way of life. Now in his new book, Unholy Alliance, Jay reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. Get Jay Sekulow's new book, Unholy Alliance, the agenda Iran, Russia, and jihadists share for conquering the world. It's available now. Available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also order it right now online at unholyalliancebook.com.
Hey, this is Jordan Sekulow. Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live, a special broadcast we have put together for you today, right before Thanksgiving. Many people on the road traveling, or if you're not on the road, you got probably family coming to you. But there's a lot that's been discussed. In fact, we've put on a lot of content through Facebook and Periscope that all of our radio listeners have not been able to hear. Great analysis from some folks who are not always regulars on this broadcast. So let's get right into that now.
Let me go to Rob first here. What's your sense of where we are?
Well, you know, Jay, I'm a minister, right?
Right.
So I look at this a lot of ways in terms of relationships. There were some strains in relationships throughout this whole ordeal.
Yep.
And especially when it comes to now the new Trump administration.
Yep.
Or Trump administration elect.
Yep.
And Congress, and especially in the Senate. Now, I spend most of my time at the Supreme Court and in the Senate, particularly the Judiciary Committee. There are some strained relationships there. There's going to have to be a lot of fence mending that
yep.
needs to go on. That's going to be a very important part of the work that I do. I'm looking forward to it. I think that's going to be successful. I think there's going to be some very good cooperative relationships.
Because there's always the tension of a campaign, and then there's the healing of the country.
Course. And people that I know do love this country, and they want the best for it, and I think we're going to see the best come out of them.
So, Harry, from your sense, like kind of, what, the significance, what do you think the message to the politicians are, first of all?
Well, thanks, Jay. First, I believe the tectonic plates of the earth have been shaken by the
yep.
most disruptive political candidate in U.S. history. Why is that? In part because the ruling elites in both political parties have failed to listen to middle Americans and the pain and anger and frustration that has gone on for decades.
Yep.
Many people have not benefited, for instance, from international trade.
Right.
They have been left behind, and we have not enacted policies that address their pain. So I think that's one message. Hopefully going forward, Trump will come up with a creative, positive, and inclusive agenda that deals with many of those issues. I hope as well that he will move towards enforcing the rule of law, expanding the democracy constitutionally. In other words, a
yep.
limited government, which is focused on doing a number of things well, and a government that reins in The power of unelected bureaucrats.
All right, and that's, of course, one of the things we wrote about in our book on Democratic was the fourth branch of government, the bureaucrats. That is something Donald Trump's going to still have to deal with. That doesn't go away. Let me take some calls here. We've got callers coming in. Let's open up the lines. 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110. Denise is calling from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Denise, go ahead.
My question is, why is Obama trying to change the borders of Israel? Yeah. What does that benefit him?
He believes, in his heart of hearts, he believes that by changing those borders in Israel to the pre-67 borders, somehow he's going to bring a peaceful moment into the international politics in the Middle East. And Rob, you and I have been to that region a lot. We do a lot of work over there. That is a false narrative. It does not work. It will be disastrous for the state of Israel.
Yeah, and look, it's not a time for anyone to just sit, on our laurels and enjoy the specter of a new era. There's still a lot of work to be done. I'd like to start preaching a little bit. Jesus said, occupy until I come, be busy.
Right.
We got to be busy. We have to be vigilant. We have to work. And this is one of the areas that we have to be vigilant on and work on.
Yeah. On the Israel situation, the Obama administration's policy here in the Middle East has been an utter failure. Donald Trump doesn't have to just do a reset. He has to do a rework.
Absolutely. And one of the things that he has to emphasize is the right of Israel to remain eternally a Jewish state.
Right.
And he also has to oppose efforts by the international community to shrink the borders of Israel.
Right.
Perhaps to an undefensible or indefensible limit. So he really has to be, I think, very, very strong in supporting Israel militarily in terms of U.S. policy, supporting the unification of Jerusalem, moving the embassy, the American embassy to Jerusalem. And essentially, he has to reject the emerging consensus of international elites that the grievances of the Palestinians have to be elevated over the safety and security of the Jewish people.
That is a very big statement that Professor Hutchins just said, because the fact of the matter is, this is the problem. And it's as much of a mindset. Rob, we're seeing this internationally with our travel, with our work, with our Oxford Center for the Study of Law and Public Policy, this anti-Israel bias. And the Obama administration, by the way, has kind of not only bought into it, has really fostered it. And that's part of the problem here.
And I'd like to just put it as an asterisk in my very amateur sense to our eloquent scholar here, to what you had to say, Harry, because if he can't be guided, cajoled into what you just laid out, then he must do nothing.
Yeah.
And it's been proven that, with his frustrated nomination to the Supreme Court, he can be put in a position to do nothing. But we have to remember that he's president until January the 20th.
Well, that's why we've got a team in place.
We have to be vigilant.
Yeah, the days between now and then are going to be significant. All right, we're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. All right, let's go ahead. Mary's calling from Kansas on line 4. Hi, Mary. Welcome to the broadcast. You're on the air.
As a Christian voter, I'm very concerned about the persecuted Christian.
Yes.
What happened to the Christian mom that was going to be hanged?
Asiya Bibi. So she was going to have a hearing last month at the Supreme Court of Pakistan. The hearing did not go forward because the judge recused himself. That's actually a good sign. We do not have a new hearing date. What we're hoping is that it means she is actually released quietly. So we have an office in Lahore, Pakistan, which a lot of people don't know. We are working on that. But the international persecution issue of Christians is something, Rob, you and I work on a lot. But Trump made it a political issue when it wasn't before. It raised the specter of how important this is.
Yes, he did. And it's worth putting on the table. A lot of people don't know that we have a very important portfolio in our foreign
policy.
In the State Department, ensconced within the State Department is the U.S. Ambassador at Large for International Religious Freedom. We want to make sure that a good name gets on the list for the president's appointment to that post. And there are lots of good people for him to choose from. And I think we ought to help him with that. So that's going to be another place I'm going to be directly involved with. We want to give him a good slate of names for that extremely important post, which was ignored under The current administration?
Yes, it was. It was filled barely only because we pushed it to get filled, and then
we had some great people in it, but it takes the force of the presidency behind it.
And we had Ambassador Cook, we had Ambassador Saperstein, but we were working more with them than, frankly, than other groups. I mean, that's just the nature of
the White House, frankly. Yep. And this White House, I think, can be counted on to make that post what it ought to be.
All right. Bob is calling from Morgantown, West Virginia. Bob, go ahead. You're on the air.
Well, thank you very much for taking my call, and I want to thank you and your team for everything that you have done. You've done such a great job at keeping American people informed, and I'd like to know that if President-elect Trump is listening, if he would ask you to assist him in making America great and taking over the Justice Department,
Who would want that job of taking over the Justice Department? I mean, that would be like, well, I'd be a demotion for, listen, I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be. I'm handling exactly what I'm supposed to be. I appreciate the vote of confidence, Bob. I was a government lawyer. I don't want to go back into government. I want to be able to deal with what I do on the outside. I think knowing your sphere is important. I appreciate it. But, you know, Harry, the Justice Department job is a big job. It's a mess. You're going to be writing on that. You have been writing on this.
Yes.
This is a top-to-bottom cleanup that has to happen, both in the Justice Department and the FBI.
And one of Trump's first and most important appointees will be the next head of the Justice Department. So I hope that he selects someone who is respected, who has integrity, and who will restore integrity to the Justice Department and the FBI. I think one of the essential things going forward is to continue to place pressure on FBI Director Comey to resign. That office, in my opinion, is in a shambles. One of the reasons for that is the director himself.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And we have called for that. We're going to work with Congress on that. We think this is a serious and deep problem. Rob, quickly, you work with these agencies also. This is a level of trust for the American people is at an ebbing to an all-time low.
Absolutely. And while the Solicitor General of the United States gets short shrift in any conversation, I watch the Solicitor General bring the force of the presidency before the Supreme Court on many crucial cases. I'm going to actually look to see who the Solicitor General is, because I'll be seeing that person in front of the court on many occasions.
Yeah. And I will have the privilege, usually, to work with them, depending on the administration. Here, more likely to work with them than against them, or against them, depending on what the case is.
Folks, we got a lot more coming up on the broadcast, but let me just encourage you to support the work of the American Center for Law and Justice at ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org to support the work of the American Center for Law and Justice. We have a matching challenge. Let me explain it quickly. Whatever you donate is doubled. So you double the impact of your donation. $5 becomes $10. $25 will become $50. So it's a great time to support the work of the ACLJ. We'll be right back.
Imagine a global war on you, but your leaders refuse to acknowledge it. Imagine this denial resulting in hundreds of American deaths and a global genocide against Christians and other religious minorities. Imagine Russia, Iran, and jihadists around the world uniting to destroy us. This is the startling reality we now face. But it doesn't have to be this way. In his new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. With detailed history, in-depth legal case studies, and expert interviews, this book reveals the historic problem and the pressing solution. Order a copy of Unholy Alliance today. It's available right now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also get it online at unholyalliancebook.com. The American Center for Law and Justice is on the front lines defending your religious and constitutional freedoms. We engage the issues that matter most. Whether it's fighting to protect Christians around the globe who are targeted simply because of their religious beliefs, or working to root out the corruption inside the Obama administration and hold those who are responsible accountable. The work of the ACLJ is vital, and we could not do it without your generous support. Now you can play a key role in supporting the work of the ACLJ. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ Matching Challenge. If you make a gift now, it will be doubled. $25 becomes $50. A $100 gift becomes $200. Please stand with the ACLJ right now. Call 1-877-989-2255 or go online at aclj.org. Thank you for your support.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. We'll take your phone calls in just a moment, 1-800-684-3110, and your comments coming in through Facebook and Periscope. But we've got a post up at aclj.org about this dangerous move, this parting shot by the Obama administration against Israel that could occur in these final days of the Obama presidency. And now this is starting to be reported in other news outlets as well. And the Obama administration is commenting. White House officials are commenting. First, what's interesting here, and this is a news story I tweeted out. It's twitter.com/JordanSekulow if you want to follow me on Twitter, where the White House official is mocking President-elect Trump's promise to move the U.S. embassy from Tel Aviv to Israel's capital, Jerusalem. He's promised to do that, and this official is saying, like others, he won't. And so they are betting, the Obama administration, that Donald Trump is going to act like previous politicians elected to the White House and kind of bow to political correctness. Could it happen? I mean, I guess you could see that, but Donald Trump has not indicated that he's going to be governed by the norms that have been associated with either our U.S. foreign policy or actions by the different government agencies, whether it's diplomatic, military, or comes down to our domestic policy. But here's some of the options that the administration is looking at, that they are considering. One, U.S. support to a U.N. Security Council resolution against Israeli settlements, or U.S. supports on a two-state solution. I mean, that could call for, by the way, you know, giving up Jerusalem. And we do believe that President Obama will give at least a speech. Now, I mean, that would not have much teeth. I mean, that's what this White House official's quote is saying, condemning these actions by Israel. But because of what's happening, I think you get mostly informed through our website, aclj.org. But I just wanted to point out, this is now making it into the news. So while there's so much focus on the Trump transition, and that's very important to our government, the Obama administration, when it comes to foreign policy, and specifically, I believe, their hostility towards the state of Israel, this is when you're going to see their actions really come to light. And obviously, President Obama is under a lot of pressure from his top advisors to take actual action, not just words.
Yeah, and Brian has an interesting phone call. Let's go to Brian, kind of related to that, in New Haven, Connecticut, on line 6.
Hi, Brian.
You're now on the air.
Yeah, hi. I'm going along right with your saying. If Obama actually does do something against Israel, can't President-elect Trump just negate or counteract whatever when he gets in office?
So it depends. And to answer your question, it's one thing if it's a, you know, executive actions. There's a great article in Wall Street Journal. President-elect Trump, once he's in office, Brian, can get rid of so much of what President Obama and undo what President Obama's done by his pen and phone. So by calling agencies and directing them, and this comes like issues like Obamacare and domestic issues, all these waivers and exemptions that have been handed out, all of the executive actions and orders that can be undone. But if you do something at the UN Security Council, Brian, and they say the administration says they will inform the Trump administration before they do this. But if you do it there, like the nuclear deal with Iran, the U.S. can reverse your policy. But you then have to go back to the U.N. and try to support a reversal policy. And then that becomes difficult because this would be the U.S. stepping out of the way for what the rest of the world has wanted to do against Israel.
Yeah, stepping out of the way of what has historically been the United States' role. I mean, a veto at the Security Council has always been automatic for the United States. And frankly, Jordan, that's why during this period of time, as the transition takes place, we at the ACLJ have been most focused on the United Nations and the Security Council, because while the Obama administration could do some things here domestically, almost all of those things can indeed be reversed by a Trump administration and probably would be. But if the Security Council passed out a resolution or maybe even referred Israel to the International Criminal Court, They would have to go through the new process when the Trump administration came in, and they would know they would have to be proactive passing another resolution as opposed to having that veto threat. So the Obama administration needs to be watched very carefully on this. And by the way, the statements that are coming out of the White House, Jordan, they are admitting that they are looking for something more than a condemnation of Israel. They say condemnations have not worked. They are looking for something more proactive to do.
All right, folks, we will take some more of your calls and comments as well through Facebook and Periscope. Those of you who are watching on Facebook and Periscope, remember to click share so your friends and family know that you're watching our broadcast right now. We can bring more folks into the fold through this way that we broadcast our show. We're on many radio stations right now as we come to you, but also through the video as well that gets you behind the scenes as well during the breaks of the show. Click that share button for your friends and family. Logan, do you want to take a comment or go to the phone?
Let's do one more call, at least for this segment. Let's go to Gina in San Diego, California.
Hi, Gina.
Good morning. Hey, I was wondering if anyone knows why Obama and the administration is so hell-bent on doing this to Israel.
Well, they're leftists. They are leftists who, I think they've just been under too much pressure politically to take the most aggressive steps against Israel that a U.S. government would do. I mean, that, and this would be the diplomatic steps at the U.N., stepping out of the way to allow for sanctions against Israel and condemnations that are real, biting with TIPA of Israel, forcing Israel into U.N.-led peace negotiations instead of bilateral negotiations that may be brokered by the United States. There's a real hostility there. If you don't believe us, just think about, Gina, the Iran nuclear deal. This was horrible for the state of Israel and for many of our other allies in the region, but specifically Israel. I mean, Iran is marching missiles through their military parades that have Israeli cities and towns on them, their names of those towns on them. And we're allowing Iran. And by the way, Iran got condemned by the UN just this week because they're creating too much heavy water for one of their reactors. They are violating their agreement. But that alone was one step. But we've seen this hostile line. President Obama's talked about the 67 borders before. He's tried to then pull back. Ultimately, they haven't taken this action at the UN. But that's what we're watching. This is the end of his presidency, and he's not on the ballot anymore. And neither are the other Democrats because of him. They won't be elected because of him in 2 years.
Jordan, I want to make this very clear. This has been the central plank of the Obama administration's foreign policy from day one. He laid it out in Cairo in 2009, talking about how he would level the playing field internationally. And one of the ways he needed to do that was in Israel in this conflict to make it clear that the United States was more neutral. We have seen steps in that direction every single year at the United Nations for the entire 8 years of his term. So to expect anything less than a completion of that plan that he clearly laid out 8 years ago during these final days, I think, Jordan, that would be ignorant and not listening to what he has been telling us and doing, by the way, for the entire term of his administration. It is literally the central plank of his foreign policy.
All right, folks, remember, we've got a second half hour coming up on Jay Sekulow Live. If you don't get that broadcast on the radio station that you're listening to right now, remember, we are broadcasting online through ACLJ.org, but also we've got the video ops. You can come inside the studio on Facebook and Periscope. So on Facebook, it's Jay Sekulow's official Facebook page. We're broadcasting now. For those of you who are watching and commenting those ways, remember to share this now for our second half hour with your friends and family. We continue to take your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110 as well, talking about the Trump cabinet, talking about Israel and the Obama administration, bringing up some issues that, again, we need to keep focus on this Obama administration until he is gone, because there's still a lot of power in being the president of the United States.
Yeah, someone just asked that. VB Brown said, isn't there some point in time where the outgoing president can stop signing corrupt orders, or
no,
are we stuck till January?
You are stuck till January. There's supposedly, they're supposed to be doing the right thing with these transitions, but nothing binds them to.
Right.
So you could see a lot from President Obama, very negative, especially when it comes to foreign policy and trying to, again, do things that would be tough for a President-elect Trump to undo quickly when he comes and takes that oath of office on January 20th. We'll be right back on Jay Sekulow Live. Go to ACLJ.org. If you can support us, we really appreciate your support. ACLJ.org.
The American Center for Law and Justice is on the front lines defending your religious and constitutional freedoms. We engage the issues that matter most. The work of the ACLJ is vital, and we could not do it without without your generous support. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ Matching Challenge. Please stand with the ACLJ right now. Call 1-877-989-2255 or go online at aclj.org. Thank you for your support.
Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. We're taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. Folks, this is now making it into the news, and we've got it up at aclj.org, but you may not have seen it yet at aclj.org. President Obama's final betrayal of Israel. This is what the president could do in his final days in office, and now we're seeing reports that confirm this from White House officials. I've tweeted both of these out so you can see the news reports about it and the ACLJ piece, which I think breaks it down very nicely by Jeff Balaban, who's joined our broadcast a number of times to talk about this. What could the Obama administration still do to negatively impact Israel? One, they could support, and this is President Obama and the Obama administration, a legally binding, that's what's important here, UN Security Council resolution declaring that Jewish settlements in Judea and Samaria are illegal, or condemning the presence of Jews in Judea and Samaria, which the United States could decide not to veto or abstain. Now, in the past, the U.S. has stood in the way of that by vetoing, or at least even just threatening to veto, and that hasn't moved forward. Also, President Obama could allow, get this, the French to unveil their peace plan and a two-state solution, allow them to move forward with a UN-forced peace brokerage of between Israel and the Palestinians, rather than allowing bilateral actual negotiations to exist. You could look at the IRS getting involved here directly in the U.S. and trying to strip pro-Israel organizations in the U.S. from their tax-exempt status, somehow say that this because of these UN resolutions. And you could try and see a recognition. You could see this administration back off from stopping the full permanent recognition of a Palestinian state by the UN Security Council. At a minimum, you're going to see some anti-Israel rhetoric by President Obama. We've got all this up. It's a great piece up at aclj.org. It's right there, President Obama's final betrayal of Israel. It's also now starting to be in the news because the White House is confirming this. White House officials are confirming this. We're also talking about Trump's cabinet as well. Logan, let's get some comments and phone calls.
All right, yeah, let's go to the phones. Let's go to Susan in St. Louis, Missouri.
Hey, Susan.
Line two. You're on the air.
Hi, Jay. I have a sort of a question that really is related to the Supreme Court.
Sure.
I had heard on Fox News that Obama can do a recess appointment after Congress goes on its winter recess. And if he could do that, that would take 2 years to reverse that. Is that a possibility? And if so, wouldn't it be advisable for Congress to stay in session?
Well, I think, Susan, you know, you talk about the possibilities and the realities. Could President Obama do it, Than? I mean, he could try and take advantage if there was an actual recess. But I think that Congress can be very wise here, take Susan's advice, and not actually go into a full recess, thus preventing any kind of these recess appointments and making this kind of null and void.
That's exactly what they're going to do, Jordan. They're not going to formally recess and allow the president to do that. There has been some scuttlebutt, Jordan, that he would do this on the day that the new Congress sits. But I got to tell you what, this is why we engaged in that National Labor Relations Board case. That case would ultimately favor Senate Republicans who stayed in session. They wouldn't get away with it. They would sue immediately, and that appointment would be struck down.
And that goes into that pro forma issue as well, Than, which Harry Reid, this was created by the Democrats to stop President Bush from making recess appointments. And so now Republicans are using the same strategy.
That's exactly right. And I, honestly, Jordan, this goes back to the point that we made that down ballot elections matter as well, because if the Senate had flipped or if the House had flipped and they were not able to agree on a resolution to adjourn and the House and the Senate did leave, if Congress left town, then President Obama theoretically would have a window to make a recess appointment. Those down ballot elections had a play in this.
Yep. We only have about 35 seconds left, but if you want to get your call in, give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. This is a quick question you probably answer. Maybe we could take it to the next segment. Said, how does the UN have so much power over a sovereign country, and how do we stop it?
Well, because the UN Security Council has this binding power. You put these countries together, Russia, China, the U.S., France, and the U.K., if they all agree on economic sanctions or military action, that's why it has so much power. It's really at the UN Security Council level itself, not just the UN generally. It's those specific countries. We'll talk about it when we come back on Jay Sekulow Live.
The American Center for Law and Justice is on the front lines defending your religious and constitutional freedoms. We engage the issues that matter most, whether it's fighting to protect Christians around the globe who are targeted simply because of their religious beliefs, or working to root out the corruption inside the Obama administration and hold those who are responsible accountable. The work of the ACLJ is vital. We could not do it without your generous support. Now you can play a key role in supporting the work of the ACLJ. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ Matching Challenge. If you make a gift now, it will be doubled. $25 becomes $50. A $100 gift becomes $200. Please stand with the ACLJ right now. Call 1-877-989-2255 or go online at aclj.org. Thank you for your support. It's a fact. Radical jihadists have one goal: complete and utter global domination. Hundreds of lives have been lost in devastating jihadist attacks from Paris to San Bernardino, Brussels to Orlando. Islamic terrorist attacks are increasingly occurring at an alarming rate. In his number one New York Times bestselling book, Rise of ISIS, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow pulled back the curtain on a new unholy alliance of Iranians, Russians, and jihadists waging war against the United States and our very way of life. Now in his new book, Unholy Alliance, Jay reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. Get Jay Sekulow's new book, Unholy Alliance, the agenda Iran, Russia, and jihadists share for conquering the world. It's available now. Available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also order it right now online at unholyalliancebook.com.
Executive actions Donald Trump will be looking at implementing on day one of his administration, January 20th, when it comes to the American worker and the American economy. And I want to make that clear to folks, because he is not broadly talking about every single issue here. He's talking about the American economy and the American work. He's not talking about social issues or even specifically health care in this, which is a larger That's not a first day. That's a, you know, and maybe not even first 100 days. There's things you can start doing, but that's a bigger overhaul when you talk about repealing and replacing Obamacare. That's a two-step move. There's regulations that you could start enacting immediately. And listen, Donald Trump has been clear in this video. We'll play kind of the beginning of the video, but just to let you know that this is, again, in our opinions, we've analyzed it, what will be likely a series of videos or statements from President-elect Trump about his plans when he initially takes office. And, it, you know, he didn't get into defense issues, for instance. I don't think he's forgetting that. I just think this is part one. And he campaigned very aggressively on these economic issues and putting America first, as he said. Let's take a listen to this is the first real address from President-elect Trump since his election.
My agenda will be based on a simple core principle, putting America first. Whether it's producing steel, building cars, or curing disease, I want the next generation of production and innovation to happen right here on our great homeland, America, creating wealth and jobs for American workers. As part of this plan, I've asked my transition team to develop a list of executive actions we can take on day one to restore our laws and bring back our jobs. It's about time.
So as he said there, his team is working on this. Here's some of what is coming. And I want to make that clear to folks at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And I'm going to go through them now, some of the specifics. And we've got sound on these, but some are just very basic because he's made it very clear. He's going to issue the notification that we are withdrawing from the Trans-Pacific Partnership. A lot of people on the left like that. I mean, Bernie Sanders crowd, and on the right. He also said we'll renegotiate bilateral with those nations. So it's not like we're withdrawing completely from trade in an isolationist way, which is how the left likes to explain that, is he wants to withdraw from the world. Instead, I think he is a deal maker. He wants to try his hand at making better deals for the American people. And let's give him that opportunity to try. That deal has been heavily criticized on both sides of the aisle. Second, and this I know is important, we got a lot of listeners in West Virginia and Pennsylvania, Ohio, Western Virginia, and some other states as well, where coal is very important. It's been and it's been job-killing, these restrictions that have been imposed by the Obama administration, by executive action order and agency decisions, that he, President-elect Trump, will cancel the job-killing, these are his own words, restrictions on the production of American energy. That includes the shale energy. So there's always this liberal controversy over that, even though it's been shown to be a very safe and effective way of making America energy independent. And clean coal, which is, the coal industry has gone out of its way, and it, you know, provides important, not just jobs to Americans, but it's an important part of our country. We could all look towards other methods, but of energy production that are even cleaner and better. But coal is part of what we need as a country. It's so important to those Rust Belt voters who really, if you look at the whole country, they made that decision to send, as usually typically, you know, their labor voters. They are, I'd say, if they vote Democrat, it's really because of these economic issues. And Donald Trump appealed directly to them, made it very clear what he would do. And so he's going to open that back up. Some of the other issues, you know, a lot of that involves the EPA. On national security, he just kind of broadly mentioned that he's asked the Department of Defense and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff to develop a comprehensive plan to protect America's vital infrastructure from the cyber attacks, which we've plagued the entire presidential campaign, and all other forms of attacks. So again, these are broad. This is what he's going to be instructing his team to do. Remember, we don't have a Secretary of Defense name yet, and they're not confirmed. So even when he names them, they're not going to be on the job yet. On immigration, you know, specifically, some actions he could take are the visas, crack down on the abuses in the visa program. That could be so broadly interpreted as to look at those DAPA, like the parents of Americans who may have gotten a visa who overstayed, even DACA, with the children, the arrivals of people who came here when they were children illegally. That can impact all of that. But I think he's gonna drill down more on those issues. I don't see this yet. Some on the left are going to say, and critics of Trump, interestingly enough, he's backing away from his more conservative agenda. I don't see that when he puts people in place like Attorney General Sessions. One more is on the lobbying restrictions, draining the swamp, which was one of his themes, a five-year domestic lobbying ban and lifetime foreign lobbying ban for employees of his executive branch administration. Obviously, in his Gettysburg speech, he mentioned more issues as well. Some of those, though, were things you can't get accomplished right away as president. I mean, Than, when you talk about a constitutional amendment to impose term limits on members of Congress, he can ask Congress to do that, but that's not a quick process. A hiring freeze to reduce the federal workforce. That is, he did also mention that for every new regulation, two regulations must be changed. I think all of this will come into effect. These are not the bans on the White House officials becoming lobbyists. Congressional officials would have to approve that on their own. He would not be able to do that, but he could certainly push for that as well. And then the foreign lobbyists raising money for foreign elections. So again, we've got plenty to look at where Donald Trump has talked about on day one what he will start doing. I really believe, Than, this is focused at the American economy and the American worker and the folks who, rightfully so, sent him to the White House.
Yeah, I think that's spot on, Jordan. And listen, obviously some of those things require varying cooperation with Congress. But what I hear in that list that you just ran through is his message of what he heard from the electorate. And if I'll give you three examples. You mentioned the Trans-Pacific Partnership. That deal was dead in Congress, but it does take a formal action by the new president to withdraw from negotiations. He's indicated that he heard the voters on that, and he's going to do it. Second, on shale and coal and energy in general, Jordan, that is a one-word message from voters: jobs. We want jobs that will have a direct impact on jobs. And then third, the immigration visa fraud. Jordan, that is squarely within his prosecutorial discretion. He has indicated that visa fraud is something that he will direct the new Department of Justice, under the direction of the Attorney General Jeff Sessions, to take a closer look at and to make a higher priority. We know, even in the waning days of this administration, that priority is getting reduced at the Department of Justice, not under the new president-elect. He has sent a clear message that he is going to make it a higher priority than it has been.
Folks on Facebook and Periscope, I wanted to know from you if you have seen this video. Let us know quickly. We're going to play it for those of you who are able to watch the broadcast. And our radio audience as well. This may be something that you did not catch yet today. I know people are busy getting ready for holidays, whether they're getting ready to travel or host family themselves. The fact is that this is significant. It may be what we hear finally from Donald Trump before the holidays. This may have been a message. He's going to be spending the holidays in Florida with his family in Mar-a-Lago. And again, he has meetings. He's meeting actually with a good friend of ours, the president of Liberty University, Jerry Falwell Jr., who is up for now in the reports, Department of Education to be again, the Secretary of the Department of Education. There are other names in that mix as well. But Than, I know a lot of folks, we probably have a lot of folks who have students or maybe grandkids or themselves who have got Liberty University degrees or people attending Liberty University. Certainly we have plenty of Liberty graduates at our offices here. And I know a lot of folks as well at the school currently, even, and people in their infrastructure. He was a early supporter, Jerry Falwell Jr., of Donald Trump, took a lot of criticism for it, even from his own student body. And so this move, again, it may be surprising to the Washington crowd, but you told me something interesting before we started the show, and I think you share it with folks, is that he's right in the running.
Yeah, no, absolutely he is. In fact, I think it's down to three names, at least from everything I'm hearing. And, you know, we discussed yesterday how maybe Michelle Rhee was one of them. But the other two names, Jordan, are Jerry Falwell Jr. and the other one is Dr. Larry Arn, who is the head of Hillsdale College in Michigan. I think both of those individuals are people that our listeners are going to be well aware of. And, oh, by the way, an indication that the new president-elect has a very clear direction for the Department of Education. And that direction is aimed in a direction that our listeners are going to like. So if it's one of those two names, I think it tells us a lot.
I mean, these are the kind of folks that are both coming. They're both two of the three are coming out of the private education world. One, Michelle Rhee, will be coming out of the public education. All are important. But I think what you're really seeing is a de-evolution, if you will, from the top down structure of our education system that has been implemented over the last really 16 years to more state involvement, more charter schools, more voucher programs actually supported by the federal government. We're going to take your calls, 1-800-684-3110, about all of this. And of course, you're watching on Facebook and Periscope. Click that share button. Let's bring more people into the discussion today. Click share on, you'll see it right on Facebook, and be part of our matching challenge at aclj.org. Double the impact of your donation. That's aclj.org. Whatever you can donate is double. We'll be right back.
Imagine a global war on you, but your leaders refuse to acknowledge it. Imagine this denial resulting in hundreds of American deaths and a global genocide against Christians and other religious minorities. Imagine Russia, Iran, and jihadists around the world uniting to destroy us. This is the startling reality we now face. But it doesn't have to be this way. In his new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. With detailed history, in-depth legal case studies, and expert interviews, this book reveals the historic problem and the pressing solution. Order a copy of Unholy Alliance today. It's available right now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also get it online at unholyalliancebook.com. The American Center for Law and Justice is on the front lines defending your religious and constitutional freedoms. We engage the issues that matter most, whether it's fighting to protect Christians around the globe who are targeted simply because of their religious beliefs, or working to root out the corruption inside the Obama administration and hold those who are responsible accountable. The work of the ACLJ is vital, and we could not do it without your generous support. Now you can play a key role in supporting the work of the ACLJ. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ Matching Challenge. If you make a gift now, it will be doubled. $25 becomes $50. A $100 gift becomes $200. Please stand with the ACLJ right now. Call 1-877-989-2255 or go online at aclj.org. Thank you for your support.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. We're taking your phone calls. This is the final segment of the broadcast. We try to take as many of the phone calls and comments that have come through on Facebook and Periscope as well. So, Logan, let's get started. We talked Trump candidate. We talked about Israel and the Obama administration. Let's just get to people's calls.
Yeah, let's do it in order. Let's go Tom in Palm Springs, California.
Hey, Tom.
Hi, Jordan.
You're on the air.
I have a comment on it. There's a lot of names being tossed around. But there's one that they have, and it was Judge Jeanine Pirro.
Judge Jeanine is a good friend of ours. We're on that broadcast a lot. And Tom, go ahead. Sorry,
not me. I've never been on. Thanks, Judge Jeanine.
I've seen some of her opening statements on her program, and she's tough.
She is very tough. A former prosecutor, a district attorney in New York. So she held a lot of tough issues. That being said, I think she wants to probably stay on TV.
Yeah, and for both sides of that, I think it's going to be hard for someone who's so entertainment focused when you're not that she's not a smart person, but when you have a television show, it's a little bit harder to get confirmed. A lot of stuff you've said, that seems to be an issue. And as Jordan said the other way, it's not necessarily, depending on how you see it, it may not be a promotion.
No, I mean, and Tom, what I think is that people like Jeanine, they've been very supportive of Donald Trump. So I think it's likely that you'll see they'll have a lot of influence. I think a lot of Fox News folks, not all of them, but a lot of them, Sean Hannity, Judge Jeanine, probably Bill O'Reilly, maybe not so much Megyn Kelly, will have really good relationships with Donald Trump. They're going to get a lot of unprecedented access. And these other news outlets are going to be as shut out, rightly so, by the way. I think they need to spend some years in the wilderness, if you will. And you can already see, like the New York Times, I wouldn't let them near the White House. I'd keep them as far away as you possibly legally can. And some of these others, like some extent CNN, until they make changes. Not that they'll always like you. They're always going to be a little left-leaning, and that may be okay. But they got to make some serious changes because they were Washington Post. They were breaking the rules of the game. And when you do that, you spend years in the wilderness.
All right, let's continue on. Let's go to Lee in Monterey, California. A lot of Californians today.
Hi, Jordan. How are you?
We're good. Thanks, Lee.
Thanks so much for what you and Jay do. My question is, Obama is not UN Secretary General.
Yeah.
And I don't understand how he can have the power against Israel. And Netanyahu had the power to stop his bid from being UN Secretary General. So I feel like Netanyahu has some power as well.
Well, here's the problem, Lee, is that it's not just President Obama. Let me go to Than to explain it. Just bring a different voice in this as well. When you talk about the Security Council, Than, and Lee, here's where it's important. It's the U.S. has been the one vetoing or threatening to veto the anti-Israel moves. If we stand out of the way, they move forward. That's why President Obama has so much power, is there's no other permanent member. There's five permanent members of the Security Council that can veto anything for whatever reason, no questions asked, and it's gone. That's the U.S., Russia, China, France, and the U.K. The U.S. has been the one thing standing in the way. If the U.S. does it, that's why President Obama has so much unique power here. There's not necessarily another country that goes and fills that void. And the other 10 members, Than, they don't have that veto power.
That's exactly right, Jordan. And in fact, in recent years, these resolutions that have been hostile to Israel and sometimes even drawn exact lines that Israel would not be able to defend, Those resolutions, Jordan, they have had the votes to pass the Security Council. Now, the Secretary General does not have a vote there. As you said, it's one vote per nation that is on the council, but only one of those five countries can veto it. So it has had the votes to pass, and only the United States veto has stopped it from moving forward. If that United States veto is no longer there, the only way to stop it is to get one of the other four nations to veto it. And quite frankly, there's only two of them, the United Kingdom and Russia, that really have much of a prospect of doing it at all. But they have always deferred to the United States on it. So it would be a very big move if the president withdrew that veto.
All right, let's continue on. Let's go to Chris in New Jersey. You're on the air. Hey, Chris.
Hey, fellas. How are you? Thanks for all you do. As a retired law enforcement officer, I personally know, worked with, and recommend Judge Napolitano to the Supreme Court. He's of the highest caliber and integrity, and he'd be a huge asset to the highest judiciary.
Yeah, Chris, I think these are folks, again, they have been very strong advocates for conservative positions. I like that Judge Napolitano is very straightforward. If he disagrees on an issue, he's not afraid to kind of break down why. And so I like him a lot. He's very good on the issues we're concerned about. But I do think, one, it comes like even with like our dad, like an age issue. Also, number two, they will have access. Are they the folks that will necessarily – I haven't seen their names come up yet. But that doesn't mean, Chris, they won't have roles, whether that's outside the administration as advocates and keeping their media roles. But, again, it's I understand why these names, because these are folks who have kind of, I think, been very open and honest throughout the campaign.
Earned your trust.
Yeah, yeah, they've earned your trust. That shows
he's
a good sign for them.
He's 66 years old.
Yeah.
It's not a long time to serve.
For Supreme Court specifically.
Yep. All right, let's go to Ginny in California. You're on the air.
Hi, Jordan. My question to you is this. Can President-elect Trump go and address the United Nations as a preemptive strike against anything that Obama might try to do against Israel?
The issue there would be, Ginny, is he probably could. But he doesn't have until he takes the oath of office January 20th. He has no actual power. So he cannot direct the U.S. government in any way. It is President Obama until the moment President-elect Trump takes the oath of office who can direct his U.N. ambassador, his U.N. team, which is all controlled by the Obama administration, to act in any way before the Security Council. So, President-elect Trump could vocally oppose this in many different places. But then... it is impossible for him. So don't put this on President-elect Trump, by the way, because it's on President Obama specifically. Congress can't really step in here necessarily. This has got to be the pressure to do the right thing.
It's on President Obama. President-elect Trump can't do anything about it. I will say this is why it is good news, though, that he is publicly giving signals that he is going to be on the side of the Israel, including that embassy move. That's about as much as he can do at this point.
All right, let's continue on. Dean in California. Hey, Dean.
Hi, Jordan. I understand that there are legal regulations that would be violated legally if the UN voted for them to Israel's borders to be reduced. But I know Jay has defended Israel in an international court. Can you tell me what can be done if that contradiction takes place?
Yeah, I mean, I think what you're referring to is potentially some laws that have passed through Congress on the U.S. taking action. But Than, really, when it comes down to it, it becomes difficult to reverse. It's one thing defending Israel, you know, whether it's the International Criminal Court and Israel's position. It's another if the U.S. government goes to the U.N. when all the other countries are agreement, they kind of write the rules of the game. Now, that may bring up U.S. laws that are at issue, but international laws not necessarily.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Now, if Israel gets referred to the International Criminal Court, the United States has not signed the Rome Statute, right, which means they're not a member of the International Criminal Court. But I'll tell you who will be there if that happens. The American Center for Law and Justice will be there on behalf of Israel.
All right, let's grab this last call very quickly.
All right, Brian, you got like 20 seconds. Go ahead, New Jersey.
Hey, you guys do a great job. I pray and contribute when I can. Hey, listen, in regards to what you were talking about with the UN, my thing is, if Trump comes in and Obama has done something against Israel, what's the power that the UN has against the U.S.? Because to me, the UN is useless anyway.
Remember, when these UN resolutions pass, that's when wars start. Like Iraq, the Iraq War, Afghanistan, these are UN resolution-backed wars. So that is the power that the UN Security Council has. I get your general ideas about the bigger UN. Great show today. Thanks, everybody.
The American Center for Law and Justice is on the front lines defending your religious and constitutional freedoms. We engage the issues that matter most. The work of the ACLJ is vital, and we could not do it without your generous support. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ.